You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
Since 1992, Australia has had a policy of mandatory immigration detention. All non-citizens without a valid visa are detained until they're granted a visa or leave the country. Therefore, hundreds of refugee and asylum seekers are sent to detention centres located in Papua New Guinea, Oahu and Manus Island. The conditions have been described by refugees as prison-like. Mental health issues such as self-harm, suicide, stress, anxiety and depression are particularly of concern for the refugees. However, access to healthcare and support is difficult. Most refugees have now been moved to Port Moresby on Papua New Guinea. Dozens are at Gransville Hotel, transferred there for medical treatment, which was unavailable on Manus Island. While some non-refugees have left voluntary and others have been sent home, an estimated 100 or so men remain in Papua New Guinea, unable to be deported because their country of citizenship refuses to accept involuntary returns. Behrouz Bukhani was detained on Manus Island for 6 years after fleeing Iran due to his work in journalism. He wrote a book, No Friend But the Mountains, while in the detention centre, smuggling out PDFs on WhatsApp. Earlier this month, he left Manus Island for the first time to travel to New Zealand. I caught up with him and he says he was quite tired when I rang, flying from Auckland to Christchurch, and hadn't had much time to himself yet due to all the interviews. We talked about the power of language in upholding inhumane structures, and his criticism of Australia's refugee policy and the power of storytelling and journalism to expose and reshape narratives. I begin by asking him on his experience on Manus Island.
Yeah, actually it's a big question. You know, my experience in Manus Island, so I have been, you know, writing and creating just to express myself and describe the situation there and, you know, expose the system. So for years and years, so I think it is very hard to answer this question in a short time and in few words. But of course it was terrible and so hard, because, you know, it's really hard to live in a place as a, you know, for exile, you know, we were in exile. And now that I'm talking with you, many of the men remain, so we don't know what will happen for them. You know, of course, they are not in Manus, but they are in Port Moresby, and some people in Nauru. So we don't know what is the next for them and what will happen for them. So, of course, it's so hard, you know. Yeah. Mm. Very, inhuman and very unnecessary exile policy, and very, you know, unacceptable. Yeah.
Mm. Because it's so great that we were able to hear your experience from Manus Island, but I'm sure there are thousands of other people who are still in the detention centres.
Yeah, in Australia and in Manus and Nauru. So in Port Moresby there are, I think, 250 people, and 50 of them are in prison right now, a real prison, and 200 people in Nauru. And so, yeah, many people in detention in Australia.
Mm. You described the detention centres as basically a prison.
Yeah, actually it was a prison, and worse than a prison. So we were in that place for 3 years, 4.5 years. Then they relocated us to a new place, and we were there for about 2 years. So 6 years we were in that place. And for me, you know, using language and words is very important, and I didn't want to use the word and concept that created by Australian government, you know. So that's why, you know, for us in that place, you know, prison was the best word, although I think it is not an enough word, and it's not, you know, actually, we should find another word, but because that place was worse than a prison. So, I didn't want to use the language of the government.
Mm. I wanted to ask about the power of words and language. What do you think the way we talk about migration or refugees or even us versus other people, how do you think language shapes the way we understand our relationships with people who are in difficult situations?
Yeah, you know, language is, we should create a language and use the language that is not the language of the system. Because the system has this power to inject this language, these words and concepts into the society. And so I think we should create some words and concepts to represent our situation, and also we should use some words to don't reduce people to only, reduce them and take the humanity, you know. And that's why I think we should be careful with the words that we use. So definitely, you know, the language of the government and the system is so, horrible in some ways, and in some ways is, you know, just reduce people, you know, and or assault people. So that's why we should be careful with the words and don't reduce people.
Yeah. Do you have any criticisms on the way the Australian policy reduces the humanity of people, because they have quite a protectionist regime, I guess?
I think, you know, what I understand from the politics in Australia is that, you know, actually this exile policy, you know, sending innocent people to remote places, you know, and keep children in indefinite detention and innocent people in indefinite detention. Of course, it is a fascistic policy, and it is with a fascism culture. So it is definitely, you know, you cannot, justify violation of human rights, you know, and say that we do this because of, you know, national security. It is a big lie, you know, it is a big lie. And I think Australian government has used innocent people such as the refugees for its political benefits and, you know, to manipulate Australian people and keep control, you know, on the country. And, you know, it is a big lie. It is one of the biggest lies in the history of Australia, that keeping people in remote prisons is because of national security. It is a big lie. You know, we were only just hundreds innocent people, you know, women, child, and, you know, so, and they have, you know, all of the countries around the world, they have a system to process people and find out that, you know, why we left our countries. So I think it is not an answer to, protecting borders or, you know, to refugee crisis. Yeah. So it's, definitely history makes judge about this period and about the Australian government. Although right now I think they lost their credit in internationally.
Mm. I wanted to ask about, the experience of women and children in these detention centres and these prisons, basically.
Yeah, actually, in Manus, all of the people were men, so So, but the families were in Nauru, so they kept the children in indefinite detention. I think 4 years. Yeah, I think four years. And then, you know, there was too much pressure on the government. Finally, they let those kids off of Nauru. But still, you know, some women remained there. And so, but, you know, I don't think, you know, even keeping kids in the indefinite detention for a day, you know, acceptable, you know, in even for a moment, you know. And when a country is doing this, they, you know, actually that shows that that country forgets about the principles about morality and humanity. You know, that should never happen, to keep innocent people in indefinite detention and justify that to the public. You know, that's, yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. And, you know, I don't think that people with good heart accept this. And, you know, it's totally unacceptable.
Because do you know why Australia rejected New Zealand's offer to take in more refugees?
Yeah, so, you know, right now the New Zealand government, you know, many times offer this, that they can take, you know, 150 people. And Australia always, you know, using this for its political benefits, you know. They say, I don't know, you know, right now I'm in New Zealand, so it is a, you know, I don't think that Australia is better than New Zealand. I mean, so New Zealand is a good country, and but the Australian government say that if we accept this offer, you know, they use New Zealand as a backdoor, which is ridiculous, you know, which is ridiculous. And, you know, when they are under too much pressure, they said, oh, we consider this offer. But when, you know, they feel relieved, they say, oh, okay, we cannot do that. We don't want to do that. And just the, you know, so hopefully, really, hopefully that New Zealand government, you know, has negotiation with PNG directly and with Nauru and take those people who remain, you know. Hopefully New Zealand take leadership and solve this problem.
I also wanted to ask how you felt about the place of the book you've written, because Australia has awarded it such a prestigious prize, yet at the same time has very, very inhumane policies and are still detaining so many hundreds of other asylum seekers, refugees, in these camps. How does that feel?
Actually, you know, I think, so this book and not my movie, I think, you know, many people in Australia read this book, and, you know, I think this award, or, you know, some other awards that I received, I think it is a resistance of civil society and literature community against this system. You know, we should understand it in this way, that actually they are resisting front of this system, front of this government that, you know, is actually treating the democracy, treating the democratic values. So that's why I think we should understand it in this way. So in fact, they, by giving this award, they show and they prove that they are not happy, they are not angry with what the government has done, you know. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, this liberal government actually damaged Australia internationally, damaged democratic values, and damaged the society. So civil society is resisting in front of this. So that giving that award, I think we should understand in that way.
Mm. What are you hoping to achieve with the film? What do you think the power of film is different to a book?
Actually, the film, you are talking about the film.
Yes.
Actually, you know, in my view, the film is important than the book. Because this book, the movie was very successful, you know. We reached to international film festivals, even in New Zealand. You know, we had still, we have many screening in the universities around the world, you know, in Europe, in America. Everywhere we are showing this movie to people, to the students. And, you know, in my view, my understanding is that, you know, this movie is important. Yeah, it's very important because actually recorded. You know, that prison that we were was demolished later. So it doesn't exist anymore. So we have this movie, you know, and you can hear the stories of people directly. And also it is about the local people, about, you know, Manusian people. And so I think it's very important. Yeah, you know, historically is important.
How were the logistics of writing the story? Because you basically use WhatsApp messages to smuggle the story out. How was it doing that?
So I think, you know, many people say this, but for me, you know, if you use your phone, you know, after a while if someone give you a computer, you cannot work in the computer, you know. And, you know, I have a computer for 2 months. Yeah, but I didn't use it yet. But I think I should change this and try to use my computer rather than my phone. So I think it's not a big thing, you know, for you people who were free and you use your computer. I think it's quite strange, but for me and for people in Manus, you know, I think it's not a strange thing, yeah, and it's not an unbelievable thing.
Mm.
Yes, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and my final question is, you used to be, so you were a journalist before.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to ask what your relationship is and how you feel, how important is it to get stories out there and to have these discussions? How do you feel about that?
You know, at the first day I arrived in Manus, actually I didn't arrive, they sent me to Manus. So I thought that, you know, it was always I have this feeling that it is like my duty to expose this. It's my duty to, you know, tell this story because it is an untold story. And, you know, that's why I actually started to work to create this way. And, you know, and right now many of the refugees share their stories, many of people. And I think it's important. 65 million people are, you know, refugees. And it is a big number of people. So I'm happy right now because actually it was, of course, definitely before me, you know, many refugees shared their stories. But I'm happy that I had a small role to create this way and other people be, you know, encourage people to write and share their stories. Because it is a part of the history that actually it is unwritten and it is not a part of the official history. So that's why I think it's important. So I, as a journalist and writer, Yeah, I did my best just to expose this system.
Yeah.
So even history will make judge about these materials that I create.
Yeah, I wondered what do you suggest is the best way to break down harmful systems that, I guess, indoctrinate people in a certain way of thinking that means that they feel it's justified to do these inhumane actions. How do we break that down?
I think, you know, the short way is election. You know, in liberal democracy, we have a, you know, election, you know, so people can make the decision, you know, and change the government very easily through the election and, you know, actually, like, dominate the, you know, the opinion, public opinion, you know, force the government, force the power structure to follow the principles. So because the power always is dangerous, you know, you should always struggle against the power to keep it, you know, accountable. They, you know, always should answer to the public. So I think the best way and the only way perhaps is just changing these systems through election. So we can do, I think anyone is responsible about politics and about the society. So if everyone be active and do a small few things, I think we can change. But of course, it is a general question. It's very hard.
Yeah, it's a big, big question.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.